Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. It's the 25th of February, 2019. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Machicki, Senator Hoffman, Senator Schauer, myself, Stedman. Got several things today. We've got, have in attendance with us Senate President Geisel, Senator Costello, Senator Stevens. We might be joined by other senators throughout the meeting as usual. We are going to continue going through departments on a fairly high overview to help the public kind of grasp the magnitude of the budget proposal in front of us. We've already started our subcommittee processes. Senator Von Imhoff had this morning Health and Human Services, starting into much more detail than we had at the meeting last week. And there'll be further meetings concerning that as she works and her committee works through that department. One of our major fiscal challenges is that department this year and probably next. So today we're going to start with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. We'll go then to the Department of Administration, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the Governor, and conclude hopefully with the Department of Revenue. Hopefully we get through those today. If we don't get through those today, we'll continue tomorrow at 9 a.m. But after the conclusion of those five departments, we will have legislative finance come before us. And those watching at home, I think you'll find that meeting very interesting. It'll be a two-hour review of the budget submission. Some of the issues will be rearranged, not in a scandalous way, but it'll be rearranged to make it a little more clear to the committee what's going on. There's different structures that can be in place, different fund sources and things like that. So the deficit numeric will most likely change somewhat, and we'll start putting a finer point on the gap that we're trying to fill either through budget reductions or transferring from savings accounts or reduction in dividends or whatever we're going to do to meet our constitutional obligation for a balanced budget. So with that, I'd like to invite the Office of Management and Budget to come forward. I see we have the director's not with us, but we have her trusty aide, and she could introduce herself for the record. And then you have some admin service directors with you. You could start your process, and we'll just continue with the same format we had before. We'll conclude a slide and then have questions and go to the next slide.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders, Budget Director for the Office of Management and Budget. This morning, we're going to start with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I have Admin Services Director Paloma Harbor with me.
Good morning, Chair Stedman and Committee. Thank you for your time today. My name is Paloma Harbor, and I'm the Administrative Services Division Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development from the Office of Management and Budget. I am here today to provide you with an overview of the Department's FY 2020 Governor's Amended Budget. This first slide shows a fund group and position type comparison of the Department's budget from FY 19 Management Plan to FY 20 Governor's Amended. The department's total general funds in FY 2019 were about $56.5 million, and that was $20.7 million in UGF and $35.8 million in DGF, or unrestricted general funds and designated general funds. That has decreased in FY 2020 to a total of $56.4 million, with $20.4 being UGF and $36 million being DGF. The UGF decrease of $294,500 was mostly offset by a DGF increase of $269,500. All of the DGF increase is realizable revenue. The department's other state funds are decreasing by $146,700, and this is primarily related to a mental health trust agreement change that I'll speak to on the following slide. The department's federal funding is increasing by nearly $400,000, primarily due to a change in the Social Security Disability Determination Program. The department's overall position count is going from 734 to 725, a reduction of one non-permanent position and eight full-time permanent positions. A majority of the position change is related to statewide consolidation initiatives. For example, six positions are transferring to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities related to facilities maintenance. Also, my position is transferring to the Office of Management and Budget. The remaining two position reductions are related to actual elimination of positions.
We have questions on the slide from members?
Quick one.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said that the shift to DGF is realizable revenue. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit more detail on what that means to you, please?
Yes. It is on my bullets on the next slide, if I could speak to it then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll go ahead and start the slide with the bullets on it.
Okay. There are three notable changes to the department's budget that impact general funds. These include the discontinuation of a mental health trust agreement and the elimination of the position that was funded by that agreement. The department determined that they could better accomplish the purpose of this agreement with existing federal funded job center staff, and that the mental health trust funds could be utilized by the trust for other priorities. The second bullet is related to that UGF-DGF shift that I mentioned earlier. The Alaska Technical and Vocational Education Program has a healthier fund balance than it has in the last couple years, and we have to distribute that balance based on statutory formula. And the Alaska Vocational Technical Center within the department is seeing an increase of $261,700 in designated general funds related to TVEP, and that's real revenue. And so we don't want to grow their overall budget, so we're reducing their unrestricted general funds by the same amount. So it's a net zero change.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So is this something that is adjusted annually then based on expected revenue coming in designated funds, or is this, this is the first time this has happened?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, this changes every year depending on the amount we believe is available in the fund based on projections. So the last 3 years, they've seen declines in their TVEP funding, the recipients of this funding. Now we're starting to see increases again.
A follow-up is, thank you, Chair Stedman. Do you care to comment on what the increase might be and how that might be extrapolated to fiscal year 21 or beyond?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the fund is doing quite well right now, and the better the economy is doing, the better the fund will do. Total wages have not declined as dramatically as we thought they would related to the job losses that were incurred in the state. For FY 2020, the total increase for all recipients is $1.5 million. We have an economist in our research and analysis shop that does projections, future year projections as well, and we expect it to stay growing moving forward.
Further questions? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know the travel reduction is 50%? If that was from best I could tell looking at the previous governor's budget, it had spiked or had gone up on a lot of the departments. Is that 50% travel reduction from straight his budget that was proposed back in December, or was it what Governor Dunleavy had proposed? Trying to just figure out where this travel budget reduction is relative to the historical kind of growth or decline of that budget.
Absolutely. Through the chair, Senator Schauer, the executive branch-wide travel reduction of 50% was applied to the FY18 actual expenditures in the travel line. So what agencies actually spent in their budget versus what they have budgeted in their travel line.
So that was my third bullet.
Right. We've seen every department has the same bullet, so we kind of like jumped over it, but the 50% standard reduction in travel. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Harbor, as you look at the TVEP program, what are these what does the second bullet point mean to those end users, those grantees that are given the money?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I have the full distribution with each recipient and how much they are getting, and I brought extra copies for the committee if they want to see that. As I mentioned, the total increase is $1.5 million for all recipients, but the amount by recipient varies depending on the statutory formula.
So generally, Mr. Chairman, if I could, generally is it an increase or a decrease to what they're getting now?
It's an increase.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions on this slide, Mr. Department? Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Paloma, it's just a comment, sir. I'd like the administration and the commissioner to be cognizant that this is paid for by the employee of Alaska. So going forward, not knowing where the budget's going to shake out and what it's going to look like, future employment numbers can go up or down, and I'd just like the committee to be aware of, if it does go down, we're going to have to backfill maybe with GF funds.
Okay. Any other questions on this department before we speedily go along to the next one? Seeing none, next department up is Department of Administration.
Good morning. My name is Sherry Lowenstein. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Administration. In front of you, you have the same slides you've been looking at. The first section, the columns on left, is a comparison between 19 Management Plan and 20 Governor Amended. I'd like to start at the top, that we have $3.9 million in federal funds in 2019, which is the current year, compared to $4.1 in 2020. The difference is about $200,000. That's due to a grant that the Office of Public Advocacy, a new grant that they received to address the opioid crisis. The next section, we have nearly a $35 million increase from $234,578,000 to $269,571.9. That's other funds. We'll talk about those here in just a minute. The bulk of that, and actually I'll explain what we have included in our other funds. We have interagency receipts. That's the funding source that we use, all agencies use, to charge each other for services provided. We have an increase there of about $150,000 difference, not much. We have the Internal Services Fund. There's an increase of $26.7 million. That's used exclusively in the Office of Information Technology as we consolidate services and bring staff into that division. We now have done a cost shift. We now pay for the people in Office of Information Technology rather than in the divisions, and this is the mechanism that we use to charge back the agencies. Another funding source we have is, that one went from $47.5 million to $74.2 million, so that's the $26 million increase. The Public Billing Fund, we use that in shared services. This is what we use to charge agencies for space that they reside in and state-owned buildings that DOA owns, Department of Administration owns. That has basically no change. It's at $15,400,000 in both years. Retirement benefit funds, we have two areas that those funds are used. That's retirement benefits and health plans administration. That went from $46,200,000 to $53,800,000, or approximately a $7.6 million increase. There's a number of changes that retirement benefits is doing there. They've added a number of contracts, which would save $4 million to the plan. They've also changed from the pharmacy reimbursement program to what they call employer group waiver plan. That's going to bring in an additional $16 to $23 million in pharmaceuticals and rebates, and then it will also save our state assistance between $40 and $52 million. Those were the original estimates, and right now it looks like there might be savings even above that. We also have in this section crime victim funds. These are PFDs that are garnished from convicted felons. These funds are used in a few areas in the state. One of those is Violent Crimes Compensation Board. They received an increase of $851,000. A portion of that is due to HB 286 passing last year, and the other portion is the higher PFD brought in additional revenues and the calculation that disperses that those funds actually increased for them. And the last, just as a side note or a recap of that, there was an increase of about $35 million in other funds. 26.7 is for Office of Information Technology. I should have noted also there's a $15 million increase in the supplemental. There's also the 7.6 in retirement benefit funds and 800,000 approximately in crime victim funds. The blue bar represents general funds and undesignated general funds for the Department of Administration. In 19, we had $105,495.5. In 20, there's a reduction of approximately $4.2 million. It brings us down to $101,300,000. In 19, our undesignated general fund amount was $72,500,000, and our designated general fund or receipt driven is $32,977,000, so almost $33 million. In 20, our general funds are approximately $68,300,000, and our designated general funds are approximately $33 million. The bulk of these for the undesignated general funds, the Office of Public Advocacy and Public Defender, are the biggest users of these funds. In 2020, they have in excess of 70% of this funding source. The designated general fund, the big user of that is the Division of Motor Vehicles. While it's only $17 million, they return $30 to $40 million to the general fund every year. On the right side of the slide, our budget to position comparison, there's a change in total of about 15. The bulk of the change is in the full-time permanent positions, a 19 increase. I believe that you've heard at one point that Department of Transportation is transferring 15 in. We have an additional 71 that we believe we might be transferring in 2020, but we have yet to identify them. So in both personal services and some of our fund sources, as we consolidate services, HR, procurement, Office of IT, we can expect to see those fund sources increase, so we have our budgets on budget and it's transparent. You can see how much we're charging agencies.
Okay, we have a question from Senator Bonimoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. You did a pretty detailed job explaining the green bar there and the other funds, and I can't help but just look on slide 7. You have two bullet points, yet you talked for several minutes on all the funds going in and out. So, Chair Stedman, can I ask my question on this slide, since clearly on the next slide it's not being addressed?
Sure, that'd be fine.
So you talked about internal services, $26 million increasing in the Department of Administration in terms of consolidating and taking over some of the duties of other agencies. Are we seeing in your previous presentations a corresponding reduction in other agencies as the administration is taking over some of these functions? I haven't seen that bullet point in any of the other presentations previously. So how is the net fund effect actually going to work?
And just before you answer that, I think that's roughly a 56% change. So for those watching at home, so this is a significant increase percentage-wise. Can you help Senator Von Imhoff with her question?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. I will use last year as an example. Between 18 and 19, we have transferred in 140 positions. The funding remains in the agencies. We use those people, provide services to the agencies, and we charge them back for that services. As we start reducing and finding efficiencies in OIT, we can start reducing our chargeback and charging less to our agencies. At that point is where you will see reductions that can be made in agencies.
If I may.
I understand that there has been some consolidation over the last few years. What is the increase this year for $26 million? Is that an increase?
Do you mind if I, may I clarify just a little bit as well through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff? There are several funds within the Department of Administration which we refer to as duplicated fund sources. So interagency receipts, the Information Services Fund, what we're doing is we're paying the rate in the agencies, so like Fish and Game, Department of Transportation, those agencies are paying into these duplicated funds, and the services are being paid for the services that Department of Administration is paying for. So that's why you don't see a net reduction in the agencies that are paying for them.
Okay, through the chair, why is there a $26 million increase?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, they're bringing the amount of the budgeted cost to the Department of Administration for those duplicated fund sources on budget in the Department of Administration. So previously, they hadn't transferred all of the positions from the other agencies into Department of Admin. Now, as they're bringing those positions into the Department of Admin, they're showing the true cost of having those positions with that duplicated fund source.
So you're saying it's a net zero?
Senator Sedman, I'm not saying it's a net zero. I'm saying that the departments are paying Department of Administration for their services. So while the positions used to be within their former departments, so within the Department of Transportation or the Department of Fish and Game, now they've transferred to the Department of Administration, and those core departments are still paying for those services within the Department of Administration now. So you've transferred the people, but the cost is still the core cost, the general fund funded, let's say, cost is within Department of Transportation or Department of Fish and Game, paying for something that's in Department of Administration.
Okay, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, you have a $31 million increase, including federal, and you've added 18 positions, which is $1.7 million worth of work transfer. Mike, just please be ready. I'm the chair for administration. We would like to have some details on that interagency interplay that are specific to that shift. It's very difficult to explain that. I'm having a hard time grasping it in these few minutes. So just please have a white paper ready to explain the details on that shift if you can.
Senator, well, I think Showers was first, and then we'll continue. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Plural. It's probably happy there's not more than one of me. So just a couple quick questions. Can I get a list of services that were consolidated into DOA? I would just like to know what those are, please. And then how many budgeted positions are vacant statewide? And just kind of looking how that compares to the necessary vacancy rate. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Physically, the positions aren't moving to a facility in the Department of Administration. Is that correct? They're going to stay where they are, like in Fish and Game and in DOT?
Through the chair, in most cases, that's exactly right. If there's areas that we can consolidate or should consolidate and it makes sense, that will be done.
Well, if I might follow up, Mr. Chairman, in most cases, what cases do you see that not happening?
Through the chair, if there's a service that only one person at this time can provide to that agency, we wouldn't want to sever that relationship and put that service in jeopardy.
Maybe you can get back with the subcommittee chairman in more detail to Senator Hoffman's question. You have another quick follow-up, Senator Hoffman?
One other follow-up, and when that happens, are we to expect that they would at least stay in the same community, or is there movement when the positions move from one department to another? Do you anticipate them relocating between Anchorage and Juneau, or vice versa?
Through the chair, only if it made sense to make that transfer. I believe there's been a few positions in OIT that have transferred. We were unable to fill. There were high-level chief technology officers, and those are the only ones I can think of off the top of my head that we've moved in OIT or shared services.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Senator Olson, and we're going to try to get on to the next slide.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. As you look at the public broadcasting that's the state has withdrawn all the funding. I don't see any money in here put together, and I realize this, most of the public broadcasting are corporations unto themselves, but I don't see any money in here to try and figure out what you're going to do with those assets that are out there, some of which are worth, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in equipment.
Can you, before you answer that question from Senator Olson, could you go on to slide number 7, kind of go through those two bullets, and then when you're done with the second bullet that ties into his question, revert back to the first bullet and answer his question, please.
On the second slide, the first bullet is to withdraw the state grants to Alaska Public Broadcasting, and it also withdraws the satellite services funding, total of just under $3.5 million, and there's 100,000 interagency receipts that are being reduced. The commission itself receives $46,700. Radio receives just over $2 million. Television, about $633,000. And satellite services is approximately $800,000. A second bullet is the statewide 50% travel reduction. The breakdown of the 459 is 289.2 in undesignated general funds and 169,900 in designated general funds. The total reduction in Department of Administration is 592,700 in travel.
Do you, Senator Olson, does that clarify?
No, it doesn't ask. My question has been, is there no money designated to go ahead and take care of some of these broadcasting stations that are going to be shutting down in the budget?
Through the chair, that's correct. There's no funding left for grants for stations.
Okay. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. So, also discussing what you mentioned in the previous slide, I think I heard something about adding contracts, something like $23 million in order, and you gave the example of saving pharmacy costs, saving well exceeding $23 million, like $30 to $40 million. Who is going to see those savings? Is that Health and Social Services or is that the Department of Administration? So if Department of Administration engages in these large contracts in order to save money, when might those savings occur and who's going to see them?
Through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff. These are savings to the health trust, so it's reducing our health care costs by entering into these contracts where we will achieve savings in physicians, travel costs, those items. So it's all directly to our health trust.
Follow up.
So to clarify, this is for the cost for state employees. Is that correct?
Through the chair, correct, and retirees.
And retirees, okay.
Any other questions? Senator Schauer.
Brief follow-up. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just, I meant to actually get an answer on that question, if you knew the vacant positions currently, the budgeted but vacant positions in the state. If not, I'd get a list, but I actually meant to get an answer before you went on.
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, we can provide your office with a list.
And send it to the chairman and we'll disperse it amongst the committee, please. Other questions? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. You just mentioned about the health care trust. Are the financials of the health care trust public? Could we here at the table see what the balances are and the annual profit and loss of the health care trust for our state employees?
And if we can't, why not?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, these are published in the comprehensive annual financial report that is put out every year by the Division of Finance, so yes, we can provide that to you.
Okay. We'll look forward to to that being provided. We have other questions? Okay, we'll speedily along to the next department. Commerce. Department of Commerce.
My name is April Wilkerson, and I am the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Starting on slide 9, This is reflective of a comparison of the FY19 management plan and the FY20 governor's amended budget based on the following funding. 52.8% is made up of the combined general funds, which is just over $86,600,000. Additional 34.3% is made up of other fund sources, and that includes interagency receipts, capital improvement funds, as well as ADA, AEA funds, and receipt support services. And then we do have a small amount, 12.9% of federal funding. The FY 2020 governor's amended budget is $164,118,000. This is an overall reduction from FY19 budget, which was $168 million. The overall reduction is $4.5 million. It's a 2.7% reduction, of which $3,266,000 are general funds. The budgeted positions reflected on the right reflect an overall reduction of 6 permanent full-time positions. 2 of those positions are actually deleted from the budget, with 4 positions proposed for transfers, including my position as the Admin Services Director. On slide 10.
We have, just before you jump over, do we have any questions on the slide before we go to the bullets? Okay, we'll move on to slide 10, and if you can take us through the bullets, please, and then the committee will come back with questions.
Slide 10 is reflective of the high priority items and the changes to the FY20 proposed budget. This includes the reorganization of the economic development component. This does include the deletion of the 2 positions, including a reduction of $243,000 in general funds. Going on to the next slide, or the next bullet, my apologies. There is a proposed reduction of $1 million within the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. This does bring that budget for FY20 back down into the fully funding the FY18 actual amounts at $8.2 million. The next bullet is eliminating the state's funding to the Alaska Legal Services Corporation. This is based on the nonprofit being able to continue that service through utilizing alternative funding options. The next bullet is a funding change of the power cost equalization from the PCE fund to general funds. This change will continue the program as it currently is, only it will use general funds. And then the final bullet is the statewide travel reduction of 50% of the FY18 actuals. The overall reduction to the department is $1,016,000.7, of which $354.2 is general funds. Each of the divisions, along with the boards and corporations, are currently reviewing all of their operations and practices to identify ways in which to meet these reductions in the travel line, including technology and combining travel when and if possible.
We have questions on the bullets. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the reduction to the Alaska Legal Services Corporation, you know, the governor's budget has had a lot of increases in terms of focusing on crime, reducing rates of domestic violence. But most domestic violence victims, their battles are really fought in the civil process with a lot of the processes, and just looking at why the reduction then in the Alaska Legal Services Corporation to help out with those victims.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, as the departments and the Office of Management and Budget were reviewing the agencies, we started off with reviewing what the core services were that were being provided by the departments. This was a named recipient grant that is not statutorily required and was identified outside of the core services for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Go ahead and follow up.
If I could follow up with that, then would that be better than placed in, let's say, the Department of Public Safety?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, it was placed within the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development because that is where the department has authority to issue named recipient grants. But again, it doesn't fall within their core services.
Senator Schauer, you had a question? And Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that if you know or maybe can get the information to the committee, I believe it, as we're looking through the crime bills, that with the fiscal notes attached, that some portion of that is in that somewhere. And I honestly couldn't tell you what the amount that we're seeing right now, but I believe that some of what Senator Wilson's mentioning was put in there. It would be good to know if we could find that data, that that money is being transferred or has been put into DPS, and one of those bills are the ones the governor's going to release.
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, I am not familiar with it being included in the fiscal note, but we can definitely look into it and get back to you.
Senator Hoffman, do you have a question on the PCE fund?
Yeah, I'll take a stab at that, Mr. Chairman. The the administration has said they want to protect savings accounts. This is a savings account that does not follow that philosophy, and I think your proposed legislation is to eliminate the fund and transfer the amount that the legislature has saved in this endowment to the general fund. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the proposed legislation would eliminate the power cost equalization endowment fund and return those funds to the general fund, and the power cost equalization program would be continued with general funds.
I think that's what I said. But the problem is that there's inconsistencies in how this savings account is being eliminated into the general fund. We have other savings accounts that are being protected, and it was the intent by the administration to try to save those protect those savings accounts. And I think that is a major mistake that we are not protecting this particular savings account. So I think that as we stated several times at this table, this fund has been in existence for over 30 years, 35 years plus, and the legislature has always came forward to endorse the concept of the fund, and I think the administration is doing that. But I believe that it is a mistake to not protect this savings account as you are protecting other savings accounts. So I would say that that we need to be at least as consistent as possible, and this fund does not provide consistency as it deals with the savings accounts.
Could you give the public a little more information on this? I think there's a couple other items that are funded out of that power cost equalization endowment. It's roughly a little under $1 billion for those watching at home. That's the rough estimate of the market value, right under $1 billion. So could you help us with that?
Senator Stedman, I believe you're referring to a few years ago, the legislature passed legislation that allows for the excess earnings of the fund to be utilized for specific programs. Those specific programs are the Community Assistance Program and first to the Community Assistance Program and then to rural energy programs. And both of those excess earnings are only utilized after the initial power cost equalization program is funded. In the governor's amended budget, the funds for power cost equalization program and for the community assistance program have been replaced with general funds.
Okay, and we have a series of questions here. Senator Von Imhoff, and then Machicki is after that, and then Bishop.
Thank you. I do have concerns about rolling the power cost equalization fund into the general fund. I think the original spirit of the PCE fund was to help rural Alaska address the high energy costs. We have other agencies like AEA, the Alaska Energy Authority, among others, that perhaps a long-range goal would be to help rural Alaska with their high energy costs, and this is a fun source to help do that in regards to doing what Kodiak has done and do more clean energy and a combination between clean energy and diesel and how they interplay with one another. I know Alaska Energy Authority is doing that. This seems very short-sighted. This does require a little bit more thought and planning to keep it in existence and to work more in conjunction with AEA and other green banks that are looking to lend money, maybe ADA, maybe other stakeholders. I think that we would be cutting our nose to spite our face to remove this fund when the long-term capability of this to help rural Alaska become more energy efficient is it to me a better goal. Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Just with a philosophy of doing business better, and in other words, at a lower cost, were there any discussions to eliminate the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development into and having those responsibilities absorbed into Revenue Admin Law, DPS, to eliminate the upper end departmental costs? Did those discussions take place, and why or why not is that not seriously being considered?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, while we were preparing the budget, there were conversations for all agencies reviewing core services, core programs, and evaluating the work that was being done by each department. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development's budget is before you as its own department and is not being proposed to be consolidated within another agency.
Okay. I think we got Senator Bishop, then Senator Olson, and then back to Senator Hoffman, I think is the order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's just more of a statement on PCE. The endowment has worked. I'm sure that the amount of interest that it as it earns in an endowment is a lot more money than it would earn in the general fund. So my question is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but you can fix it till it is.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment on power cost equalization. It wasn't necessarily designed as a subsidy for rural Alaska. It was designed to equilibrate throughout all residents of Alaska, because the gas subsidy that was for generating power in South Central Alaska and the hydro dam, the four dam pool, this power cost equalization was make it so that all people in the state of Alaska could have some type of assistance in their electric bills. But my question has to do, Mr. Chairman, as you look at the community assistance program, which is not in your budget but is administered by you, it's under my understanding that there's been some fairly complicated fund shifts. The $90 million that was there, $60 million is going someplace, and then the alcohol tax is being added to it. What's the ultimate outcome to that, and how can we assure those small communities and the big community as well that they will be getting some type of assistance this coming fiscal year?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, along with the PCE endowment, the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund, the Community Assistance Fund is also being proposed to be eliminated. There is $90 million within that fund currently. Mm-hmm. $30 million of it will flow out to communities in FY20 without further appropriation. No appropriation is needed. That money will go to communities in FY20. The remaining $60 million would be proposed to go to the general fund, and the program, similar to the Power Cost Equalization Endowment or Power Cost Equalization Program, would continue to be funded with general funds on an annual basis.
So go ahead, follow up.
So that what can the communities look forward to for the year after?
Through the chair,
sounds like there's not going to be any money for it.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, there would be $30 million appropriation annually in the operating budget.
$30 million annually. I can tell my communities that.
through the
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Are you committing to that? You want to put a little hesitation at the end of that sentence?
Senator Stedman, there is $30 million in the governor's proposed FY20, there is not $30 million. There is $30 million that will flow out directly in FY20. In the future, it would be proposed with general funds.
Okay, that sounds a little safer answer.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification, you had stated that after community assistance, the funds would go toward rural energy. In fact, the legislation that was passed by this committee and adopted by the full Senate and the House and signed into law gave those funds to a renewable energy program, which I think is a wise use. So trying to encourage people to apply to get renewable energy so that they will put less pressure upon the power cost equalization program. And I thought that was a very fine feature. And by eliminating this, we have no path forward to try to help high energy communities in the state of Alaska get off of diesel and look toward developing renewable energy as a source. So I, again, with this facet, I think the proposal that the administration is presenting is short-sighted.
I want to make just a real quick comment, just for those at home watching. The levelization of energy costs around the state is very difficult due to the huge gas resources in Cook Inlet and the low cost to the burner tip of natural gas, which is about, I think, roughly about 6 cents a kilowatt. And if you go into Southeast and Kodiak, those dams that were built are relatively a permanent structure. So the endowment concept was set up for the rural communities because of the lack of a need for annual funding discussions through the budget process. As an example, those dams are built and they're going to stand for 100 years plus. The gas resources infrastructure's in place and it's going to stand. So trying to level out the energy issues around the state. So we get into some annual budgetary disadvantages to rural Alaska if they have to scrap every year for their appropriation under the initial concept of trying to move some of these big energy projects forward that benefit particular areas. Another one coming is going to be the Watonna Dam. That's not that dissimilar. So anyway, we'll take that up as a policy issue as we move forward at the committee and go from there. But we have any other questions? The committee have any other questions on this department before we move on to the next department? The next department's the governor. And before you get started, I'm sure that as the earlier question for the previous department, there is no plan to eliminate this department?
Good one.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Senate Finance Committee members. I'm Sean Henderson. I'm the Administrative Services Director in the Governor's Office. And just want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to present. With that said, we can go directly to the first slide, which is the funding comparison. The total budget for the Office of the Governor is slightly increasing from $28,850,000 to $28,961,000. The under-restricted general funds are reduced from $27,781,000 to $24,747,000. The other funds are increased from $838,000 to $3,984,000. There will be details on that increase on the following slide. the federal funds are reduced by 1,000, and that is your overview summary of the funding. On the right side of the slide, you see the budget positions comparison. The non-permanent positions are remaining the same. The full-time budgeted positions are increasing from 136 positions to 154 positions.
We have any questions on slide number one? Okay, we'll go on to the bullets.
Going to the second slide, the three bullets, starting with the first bullet, the contingency fund is being reduced in the governor's office by 300,000. The second bullet reflects the changes from admin order 302, which transfers the admin services directors to the Office of Management and Budget. That change reflects a $2,706,000 change funded with interagency receipts. And the third and final bullet is the statewide travel reduction, resulting in a $618,000 reduction to the governor's office budget.
We have questions on that. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at some of the 18 or so positions that have been added, how many of these are partially exempt or exempted positions, and are they reflected in this budget?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, those positions are reflected in the budget. There are, as noted, the change is 13 ASD positions that are transferred. There are three positions from the Division of Economic Development and two positions that were transferred from the Department of Fish and Game.
Mr. Chairman, last question. What's the average cost of each of these positions?
Through the chair to the senator, I don't have that information with me today, but can gladly provide that to you, or it can be provided in a subcommittee, but I would welcome the opportunity to provide that information.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like it given to the chairman as well as the committee members.
Yes, we can have them produce that. That's public, all public information. So, hey, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. So when I read the word consolidate, and you did allude to it, that several positions are moving from different departments into here. So similar to the conversation that we had before, is it a net zero sum game, as in other positions that were doing the work before are now doing the work here? So as an overall budget, it's zero?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes. They were physically transferring the admin services directors from their agencies to the Office of Management and Budget. The home agencies that were previously paying for those positions will continue to pay for those positions. They're just located within the governor's office budget.
Right, we have other questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you explain or tell the committee what were some of the predominant uses of the contingency fund? How much will this leave with the reduction of 300,000 in that fund? Say for the last 2 years, what were some of the contingencies that the governor used those funds for?
Through the chair to the senator, the contingency fund is being reduced, as noted, by 300,000, which leaves the balance in the contingency fund at 250,000. The last year, approximately, only funding used out of that count last year was for the transition-related cost. Prior to that, I don't believe we used any of those fundings. The contingency fund has been in the governor's budget for as long as I can remember. Every governor has had a contingency fund. And at some governors, that amount was considerably more than the $550,000. I know this was an issue of discussion last year, and I think that's one of the reasons it's being reduced in this year's budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Senator, let's go to Senator Chickie. He hasn't asked one, then we'll go to Senator Von Imhoff.
I'm trying to understand in the admin budget the shift in responsibilities that will be now living under that department showed a $30 million increase approximately. I don't see that increase demonstrated in the governor's budget with the positions that are being shifted to this. Am I missing that somewhere on that $2.7 million increase, which is essentially just on paper, but am I missing that on this, the chart prior to this one, this slide?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, the approximate $3 million change shows in the green bar. I'm not familiar with a $30 million change.
In the Department of Administration, it actually, you could see the jump from those positions shifting. Here, it looks like you just shifted the general fund line down, yet I don't see an increase in that $2.7 million spend, as we did in the Department of Administration.
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, it is showing in the green bar, it's just significantly less. There are also some technical changes between FY 2019 management plan and FY 20 in the governor's budget, reducing one-time items out of the budget. That may be the difference that you see in the general funds, the blue bars. But Mr. Henderson can provide you some additional details on those number changes if you want to see those.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
If there was a $2.7 million reduction, I would think that would result in a bullet point on the next list, on the next page on slide 13, and I don't see that. That's a fairly significant change.
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, reversals of one-time items, language items from the prior year are commonly referred to as technical in nature. Any language item that's included in the operating budget is reversed in the following year. We didn't include those just for the technical nature.
Other questions on this department? Oh, yes, Senator Von Imhoff, I forgot about you.
Thank you. I won't let you forget about me.
Okay.
So just a real quick, I did a quick calculation. The administrative service director is at $2.7 million divided by 13 is about $208,000 per person. I'm assuming that's salary and benefits. So that's just a quick calculation to kind of address some of the questions earlier. We've been reading in the paper that the governor has various different policy advisors for various topics. Are those brand new positions this year, and how are they reflected in this budget?
Through the chair to the senator, policy positions in the governor's office have existed in prior administrations. They are not new positions. Obviously, they are new people that are assigned to those positions, but they are reflected in the budget, the cost of those positions.
Other questions on the department? Seeing none, it's good to see that you came forward with a non-termination of that department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And we're going to go to Department of Revenue next, and that's the final one. final one on the agenda today, so we're doing good.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Brad Ewing, Department of Revenue Admin Services Director. In today's hearing, we have a brief overview of the Department of Revenue's operating budget for FY20. Before that, though, just a quick overview of the department itself, its somewhat unique structure. There's four core divisions: Tax Division, Treasury Division, PFD Division, and Child Support Services Division. And then there's also a variety of corporations, boards, and authorities, including a Retirement Management Board, Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, Permanent Fund Corporation, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Moving on to slide 15. Department of Revenue's FY20 proposed budget is $727 million. If we were to exclude the management fees component of that, that would result in a reduction of $755,900 from FY19 management plan to FY20 governor's amended proposed budget. It's also a reduction of 7 positions. For the general fund component, which is 4% of the Department of Revenue's budget, it's $27.6 million. About half of that is in the tax division, followed by child support services, treasury, and administrative functions, including commissioner's office and administrative services division. From FY19 to FY20 proposed budget, it's a decrease of $298,600. Most of the reduction is found in the tax division, child support services division, and the travel reductions throughout the state. Of the general fund, $27.6 million, 92% of that is UGF, unrestricted, and 8%, or $2.2 million, is designated general fund. Of the designated, most of that is in the gaming section of the tax division, unclaimed property, mental health trust authority, administrative budget, and PFD division. The other fund sources represent $620 million of the FY20 proposed budget. That's 85% of the Department of Revenue's budget. It's comprised of 15 fund sources. Most of this is through the management fees, through the Permanent Fund Corporation, the Retirement Management Board, and the Treasury Division. So $530 million of the $620 million that you see in the green bar are from management fees. There's also other fund sources used for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Permanent Fund Corporation, and Retirement Management Board. The increase that you see from FY19 to FY20 is not due to an expected increase in expenditures. Rather, it's this administration's interest to have more transparency through the budgeting process. There are some management fees that are paid directly through appropriations, but most of them are paid as a net of fee arrangement, so the investments that are made, the fees are taken out of those investments. And the intent here is for, with this administration, is to more accurately represent the actuals of the management fees in the budget appropriation. The last portion of the chart is the federal funding. $79 million in FY20 represents 11% of the Department of Revenue's budget. Most of the $79 million is in Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which has $60 million, and Child Support Services, which has a 66% match with general fund through federal dollars, and so $16 million of the $79 million federal funds are for Child Support Services. From FY19 to FY20, that represents a decrease in federal funds of $254,700. The chart on the right shows the change in position counts from FY19 management plan to FY20 governor's proposed budget. Those 7 positions, 3 positions are reduced in the tax division, 3 positions in PFD division, and then my position transferring over to Office of Management and Budget. Of those 7 positions, 5 will be reduced from Juneau and 2 from Anchorage. Overall, in FY19, there were 882 positions, and in FY20, there's proposed to be 875 positions. Of those 875 positions, 577 are in Anchorage, 228 are in Juneau, and 27 are in Fairbanks. The position counts are pretty evenly distributed between the core divisions and the corporations, boards, and authorities.
Do we have any questions on the side? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. The blue bar jump is quite large. You did touch upon it. In the world of finance, cash is king, and it's all about the flow of cash. So what I heard you say was bonuses and compensation for this somewhat de facto asset management company, Department of Revenue, is paid net of investment fees. So what that means is normally the department would pay $1 million in investment fees, but then the department wants to provide excess compensation for performance of the funds, and instead of paying all the investment fees, holds back some of it as compensation or management align management fees with actuals. So please describe what you're saying. What cash is going out the door to pay management fees to whom?
Within the through the chair, Senator, within the Permanent Fund Corporation, I believe it's 60% of the investments are managed externally and 40% are managed internally. So for the externally managed funds, there's fees associated with that. And similarly with the Retirement Management Board and Treasury Division, I believe it's about 50% are managed externally. And so these fees are associated with the external management of those funds.
So let's go to the next slide, because I think that's starting off right at the first bullet, so line management fees to actuals.
Senator Stedman, if I may, can I pull a lifeline up here on this one?
And yes, we'll have a brief at ease.
Thank you.
Come back on the record. Let's go ahead and go through slide 16, and then we'll open it up for questions on that whole slide, starting with Senator Von Imhoff's question on management fees.
So the first bullet point relates to aligning management fees with actuals this year. Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, that's an increase in $269 million. Retirement Management Board, an increase in the appropriation of $60 million. And Treasury Division, an increase of $117,200 for general fund and $70,400 in other fund sources. There's also a bill moving forward, I believe it's SB 69, to reduce regulations associated with small charitable gaming. The proposed bill would modify statutes municipalities and qualified organizations would not have to apply for a permit or pay an annual fee if their gross receipts are less than $20,000, and that represents about 15% of the charitable gaming permittees currently. So as a result of that bill, then we could see a reduction of two permit full-time positions. And then the last bullet point is the statewide executive branch 50% reduction in travel that will be administered through the core divisions, or all divisions, as well as the corporations, boards, and authorities.
Okay, and we'll revert back to the question number one from Senator Von Imhoff. You want to introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then help Senator Von Imhoff with that question?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Barnhill, OMB Policy Director. So, Senator Von Imhoff, there has been a practice in both retirement contexts, retirement investment contexts, as well as the permanent fund context that dates decades, I believe, that for illiquid investments, real estate, private equity, hedge funds, that the investment management fees are paid directly from the cash flow of those investments, and an appropriation isn't sought. For all other investments that tend to be more liquid, publicly traded securities, domestic equity, international equity, those investment management fees have historically been paid by a check or a wire that comes from the Permanent Fund Corporation or from the Department of Revenue. It's only that latter category for which an appropriation has been sought historically. The amount of, I want to hasten to add that the investment management of illiquid funds, real estate, private equity, hedge funds, is not free. In fact, it's substantially more expensive than the investment management, including the active investment management of domestic and international equity securities as well as fixed income securities. But over the past, call it 5 years, as both of these organizations have deployed more assets into the illiquid space, and the performance of those assets has done quite well, the investment management fees associated with those have gone up steeply. Nationwide, there's a discussion about how appropriately to reflect and report on investment management fees across the entire portfolio. And in this case, it has seemed to me, I'll speak for myself, that there has been increasing confusion and misunderstanding about what the total investment management fees for these two organizations is, because of the disparity between actual fees and appropriated fees. So the point here is to increase transparency so that this committee, as well as the people, understand what the total fees are to manage these important portfolios.
Follow up, Senator Ronimo.
Thank you. So it looks like $328 million is increased from fiscal year 19 plan to fiscal year 20 plan in these management fees. Is that an additional cash outflow from the Department of Revenue to illiquid investment managers?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, there's additional nuances. In the Department of Revenue's context, they've switched the billing for their liquid assets so that those fees also are paid from cash flow. So for the large majority of the Retirement Management Board funds, there isn't any check written anymore. It's all paid, almost all of it's paid from cash flow. Again, the point here is not to focus on cash inflows, outflows. It's to focus on what is the total cost of investment management for these funds.
Senator Machicki.
So just please clarify for us, but I think my question that I'm going to ask is, where did this cash outflow live before, and why are we seeing it in the Department of Revenue as an increase of $330 million this year that we didn't see before?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, in the past, for illiquid investments, the investment management fee has been paid from the cash flow of the investment.
So if I could reword that, so it was paid without an appropriation?
Correct.
And now we're going to bring it back to the table and have an appropriation and actually see it. So it was basically kind of off balance sheet is one way of looking at it, payments. So if we wanted an actual comparison, we'd have to go back and restate last year, is that?
I'm going to pause on off balance sheet. There's different treatments within these two organizations about how they report investment management fees. So in the case of the permanent fund, they report only the fees that are appropriated in their annual report. In the case of the Retirement Management Board, all of the fees are reported in their comprehensive annual financial report.
Okay. We've been joined by Senator Wilikowski. We have other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said that the second bullet point, when you're deregulating small charitable gaming in Senate Bill 69, has there been similar legislation introduced on the House side? If not, why not?
Through the chair, Senator, I am not aware of similar legislation currently in the House.
Why not?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we'll have to get back to you. My understanding is all the governor's bills were going to be introduced on both sides. So I don't know the answer.
You can get back to the committee on that. Other questions? Just a second. Senator Machicki.
Same subject. I'm trying to wonder why we care, since it's been reported as a net. Why do we care that it's reported as a gross when there's not an increase or decrease in those investment fees?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, transparency with respect to investment management fees is something that folks care deeply about. The more investment management fees you have, that impacts returns. There's been a national discussion about how to appropriately report and have transparency with respect to investment management fees. I'm happy to share with the committee a fairly substantial report recently prepared in the state of Pennsylvania with respect to the reporting and transparency with respect to investment management fees. It is an important element of investment management.
I think from those that watching at home, the committee struggled for years always parsing, is it net or gross of fees in the presentation and performance that have presented to us. So this hopefully will help clarify that issue going forward. Senator Machicki.
Just to follow up, I'd then please provide the committee, if you can, with the, I'm not sure why you chose illiquid versus liquid. If we want to look at investment fees, it's a much greater proportion for the liquid investments. I would prefer seeing both of those categories clarified for the committee.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, in the case of the permanent fund, the investment management fees associated with the liquid investments totaled with the expenses of the corporation just over $151 million. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got the actual numbers right here.
We'll have a brief at ease.
No,
on the record.
So for the permanent fund in FY18, the management fees associated with the liquid investments, those paid for by appropriation was just under $119 million. For the illiquid investments, it was $276.4 million. And then fees for the corporate expenses were just under $24 million. So, and my point in saying that is to reiterate again that over the past few years, the amount of management fees associated with illiquid investments has increased substantially.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we're looking at these management fees, is there a difference in the funds that we contract out and the funds that we invest internally so that we can, the legislature can get a clear idea, as is the case with the board, as they've been moving more and more toward investments, hiring investors in the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, both organizations can provide all the detail the committee wishes to see with respect to each of its managers, the type of investment managed, and the cost of that.
We will be having a permanent fund in front of us at some point here relatively shortly, and we can go into that along with the revenue commissioner will be here also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think we have Senator Wilikowski, then Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Apologize for being late. Question on the dividend. Didn't see the PFD in the budget or the back payment of the PFD in the budget, and just curious what the plan is to have the dividend paid out.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the position of the Dunleavy administration is that the dividend is paid outside of the operating budget, and so there is legislation pending to pay the dividend in a separate vehicles.
Okay, we have Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I have this clear for myself, really, what I hear you saying is this is perhaps the most transparent way for us to know what is actually being spent on the administration. And in addition to that, if you could answer that, are there other places we should be doing the same thing that we're not to show what we're actually spending?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, there are a variety of ways of being transparent on investment management fees. And I don't want to suggest that neither of these organizations are being transparent. They are. The permanent fund does post the total amount of its investment management fees on its website. It doesn't report them in its annual report. The Alaska Retirement Management board also discloses the totality of its investment management fees in its comprehensive annual financial report. The issue that I'm identifying here is that through the appropriation process, most of the public gets their understanding from the totality of the investment management fees from what's in the budget. And I believe that there is now a misunderstanding both within this body as well as in the public as to what is the totality of the investment management fees. So we're attempting to use the appropriation process to introduce a enhanced level of transparency so that the public and this committee and the people in this building understand what the totality of the investment management fees are.
Are there questions? Senator Wilikowski.
I could just follow up to my previous question on the dividend. You're going to do a separate appropriation bill on the dividend, or are you seeking to have an automatic transfer from the Permanent Fund Corporation to the Department of Revenue?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, to your latter question, no. To your former question, yes, there is a separate bill to do an appropriation for the Permanent Fund dividend.
Okay. We have other questions on the Department of Revenue? Seeing none, we'll, again, for those watching at home, we'll have the Permanent Fund Corporation before us and the Retirement Board before us in the future also and be able to go into more details as we work through this process. That concludes our agenda for the day. We're right on time. I appreciate the presenters being timely and the committee members also working with the clock so we can stay on schedule. Tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., Legislative Finance will do an overview of the FY20 operating budget. I think you'll find, the public will find, some of the numerics are going to change a little bit. The deficit number will probably change a little bit, and we'll further continue to refine the budget gap that we're struggling to solve here at the table. So I encourage the public to tune in 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, and committee members to be here with their support staff. We should have a lively and informative meeting, and other senators that aren't on the committee. Some of them have been very diligent over the last couple of weeks and appreciate that. And hopefully we'll have a good attendance tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. We are adjourned.